This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by The Morning Navigator, a daily newsletter written by Tony Greer, who is a 30-year veteran trader in the financial markets. I think it's important to be responsible with your personal finances and investments, and it's hard to do that without understanding the markets. Now, this is where The Morning Navigator fills a specific need for me. If you're looking for actionable trade ideas or simply to educate yourself about the markets, then The Morning Navigator will help you to do both. It's an interesting, informative, and amusing daily read. Now, a subscription to The Morning Navigator normally costs $60 a month or $650 per year. However, my listeners can go to tgmacro.com, sign up for a free one-week trial, and apply the code ZUBY, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for a discount of either $10 off the $60 a month subscription or $100 off the $650 annual subscription. As you can infer, the annual subscription is a better deal. Either one is a win when it comes to understanding the global markets and managing your personal investments. So once again, you can sign up today for a free trial at tgmacro.com. tgmacro.com. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on the man, the myth, the legend, the founder of McAfee antivirus software. I'm sure some that's going to ring a bell for a lot of people out there. And he is also running for U.S. president in 2020. And this is Mr. John McAfee. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be on your show, and thank you for inviting me. And for those of you in the listening audience, I was late. I am not generally late. I think it's very rude to be late. I wanted to apologize both to my host and to the audience.
That's all good. What a gentleman. What a gentleman. So, John, for people who don't know you or may not have heard about you, give them a little background about you.
A little background.
Yeah.
Well, in which respect? I mean, the off-the-wall number of times I've been in prison background.
Well, maybe we can...
My technological background.
Yeah, well, let's
My political background. I'm sorry.
There is a lot. There is a lot. You've had an interesting life. So, I mean, so everything with you, I mean, you started... So you were actually born in the UK.
Yes, I was at the end of World War II. I'm 74, born in 1945, September 18th, in England. At the time, a bombed out and fairly desolate victor, and it was a victor, along with the other allies. But really a devastated time. My father was an American soldier. My mother was a beautiful young British woman. My father was stationed in England for a while. I was the result. And it was 2 years before we could come to America because at the end of the war, there was economic devastation everywhere. No one had money. No one had passage. My father was shipped back to the States, summarily dismissed along with everybody else. You know, we don't need millions of active soldiers in peacetime. So anyway, it took 2 years to organize it. And I went to America, where I grew up and spent the absolute majority of my life. I'm an American citizen, a I love America. You know, I have admittedly lived 15 or more years outside of America in various countries. Nevertheless, I always returned. That was merely for experience.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry?
No, I just said got you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm American through and through. Anyway, I came over to America when I was two to the poorest region of America called the Appalachians. Look it up, people. It scores well with any poverty-stricken area of this earth. Nothing. Coal mines, coke ovens filling the sky with black smoke. And so that's where I, at the age of two, ended up. And for the next 10 years, lived and sucked in the environment there. Now, you can imagine what it was like in 1947 when I arrived, up until 1957 when I moved on with my parents. Brutal, uneducated people. You know, as an example, here's a story. When we first came over to the States, a little town called Norton, Virginia, the heart of the coal mining part of America. And my mother, British, never been to America, first time at the grocery store. And, you know, they knew my mother was English. And so, I knew a few words. I mean, I'm 2.5 years old by then. I can speak a little, know my name, hello, goodbye, da-da. And the lady's going, oh, my God, he speaks such good American. No, did not know that in England they spoke the same. Okay. That's how uneducated the region was, and poverty, and brutal beyond imagination.
When you say
brutal, poverty is a brutal life. See, people think, oh, these people go, you're raised with a golden spoon in your mouth. What the world are you talking about, people? Yeah. Power, golden, silver spoon. Are you crazy?
So how did you go from...
Until I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
This is my reality.
And how did how did you go from that to founding a super successful company in the world of tech, with McAfee Antivirus? How did a boy from that sort of background end up in that position? What was the story there?
That was due entirely to my grandfather in Norton, Virginia.
Okay.
Let me tell you about my grandfather.
Please do.
Do not let me forget the thread of this. The thread is, where are we going? How did it go from net to a successful company or more? Okay, yes. Good. It's because of my grandfather. Now, my grandfather, to give you his history, when my father was 12 and his next younger brother was 8 and the next younger brother was just 2, my grandfather just up and disappeared.
Okay.
Disappeared. My father was left with supporting his mother, his two younger brothers, in the 30s, for heaven's sakes, the height of depression. No grandfather. 10 years later, my grandfather returns, shows up at the door, and my grandmother takes him back without question. Without question.
Wow.
Without anything. Welcome back, Mac. Mac is what they called him. McAfee.
Yeah.
That's what he comes from. Welcome back. Everybody called him Mac. He was missing a finger. That's the only difference between when he left and when he came back, other than 10 years older. And they never told anyone why or how his finger was no longer there. Other than that, there was no mystery to this man. He had stopped drinking. He was a settled down mofo. But my father, who had to spend 10 years supporting his mother and two younger brothers in a depression, was pissed off that my grandmother took him back. So he left home and joined the army. And then America gets into a war, and next thing you know, he's over in England, where he meets my mother. So that's that. But it goes to my grandfather. My grandfather, when I knew him at the age of two, because then he was back, we were living in the apartment below his house. And to me, he was God himself. He taught me how to shoot. He was, I've never seen a more honest person, although I understand. Prior to his leaving, that he was a serious hellraiser. But in any case, my grandfather taught me a lot. One of the things that he did teach me is never believe a word that anyone else tells you about something that you're able to see yourself.
Okay.
Very few have that talent. You understand? And we get the coronavirus nonsense going on around us now. In any case, so that and other smaller things that he always told me, trust no one, meaning no one. Not your wife, not your children, if you have them, certainly not your father, and not even me. That's what he said.
Wow.
You can only trust one person, and that's yourself. These and other things is why or how I got from the poorest region in America, not all of the North American continent, into a position where I could feed myself and buy a car and a television. It's because I followed my grandfather's advice and trusted no one, not my business associates, not the people I hired to work for me. And I always thought for myself. If 1,000 people all reasoned something out and said, this is the answer, okay, well, let me reason it out first myself, and then I'll join you. And if I come up with a different answer, I don't care. If it's like right now, the coronavirus, the entire world's going, oh, my God, it's good. Well, I'm saying it's utter bullshit, and you will see in 6 months' time. Everybody's throwing stones. Sorry, my language. I apologize. Please. I'm doing the best I can.
No. I know you're attempting to censor yourself. That's okay. That's okay.
I'm sorry.
I said that's okay. I know you're making an effort to reduce.
I'm seriously making an effort. Okay. It's difficult because I'm not sure which words even unpopular words, right? But I'm trying. I really am. If I speak slower, it will be easier. So let me try that. Okay. Well, give me another question because this thread is going nowhere.
No, that's okay. So let's move on forward a little bit. So, I mean, you're known for a lot of things, man. Like I don't even know where to begin. So, I mean, for the past couple of decades, it seems like you've been all over the place, lots of unknown locations, some known locations. You know, obviously, I don't want you to put yourself in any sort of legal situation or anything like that. But can you just sort of give us a history of the past, I don't know, 10 years?
Let's just give some highlights.
Yeah, what's been going on? Yeah, I'm just curious. I see snapshots.
I mean, I started McAfee Associates.
Yeah.
Took it public. Left it very quickly because once it became successful, we had 5,000 employees. I wasn't enjoying myself. I'm dealing with stockholders and board of directors meetings and personnel issues. I don't even know the names of the people I'm passing in the hall, and they work for me. Who wants to be in that position? Not me. I said, I ain't doing it. I'm not doing it.
Okay.
So I hired a replacement, left, and just wandered the world. Started up little businesses here and there, not to make money. I gave them always to the local people where I was, whichever country I was in, and just pleased myself. Find out who am I. Listen, I got enough. Listen, I had more money than God, and no one should ever be allowed to have as much money as me, nor anyone who has more than what I have had. Because seriously, no, I'm serious. When you are in a position where you name an item, name an item. Oh, honey, there's a yacht here for sale in Miami. And isn't this kind of the one you wanted to go fishing in? It's only $21 million. Let's buy it. And you don't give it, you don't care one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no skin off of you, Matt. I mean, listen, the money that you have, without doing anything with it other than putting it in investment bankers' hands, mm-hmm. who return your rate of, if you're lucky, even more than 5% a year. I mean, so we have, every month, we're getting millions of dollars for doing nothing other than sitting on our butts.
Mm.
And so no one should have that much money. I'm just saying, no.
So that's a very interesting statement to make for someone who's known for being very libertarian. When you said that nobody should be allowed to have that, that only because
anybody. Can we talk about libertarianism? Are you a libertarian?
Let's do it. Not totally. I have libertarian leanings, some kind of conservative leaning / libertarian leaning on most things, somewhat liberal on other things. It really depends.
Here is the problem with libertarianism, which no one has yet brought up, addressed, let alone solved.
Okay.
And it's this. The libertarian philosophy, which is so profoundly beautiful, states that your body and your mind belong to you, no one else.
Mm-hmm.
That's rule one. Number two, that your obligations to society are only to tell the truth, keep your commitments, and not harm anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that a beautiful fight? Isn't that a beautiful, sorry.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'm down with that.
But here's the problem. And everything else, you do as you wish. That's,
I don't know if I agree with that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, that's, why not? If you're not harming anybody.
Yeah, well, okay.
Not interfering with anybody else's rights? What's wrong with that?
No, I agree with it from a legal perspective. But not so much from a societal and individual and moral perspective, if that makes sense, right? I think people need more stuff to guide them than just that aspect. But from a legal perspective, I generally
do they. Okay, let's talk about that because that's
what you
just said is a far, far more important subject than the thing we're bantering about.
Okay.
And that is. Say it again exactly the way you said, please.
Oh, gosh. How exactly did I say it? I said that I think that beyond doing whatever somebody pleases, as long as it doesn't harm or infringe on another person's right, I think that for an individual and a society and for a community to actually have to be cohesive and to be moral and decent, I think that people need guidelines that go beyond that.
Okay. Now, you said it exactly the same. So you actually believe that statement. Wonderful. You and I can have a great conversation. Because I'm sorry, I have to disagree with every word.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That you said.
Interesting.
Let us look at reality. Who makes the guidelines? Who decides what is moral? Because these are the frameworks upon which we get the guidelines, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But so I have no problem with guidelines, provided every human can agree on those two things.
Mm-hmm.
Morality, number one, let's forget everything else. What does that mean, my friend?
Sorry, say that. I missed what you just
said. What does that mean? Morality.
What does morality mean? Okay, well, I don't have a dictionary definition, so I...
Listen, if you had a dictionary, I could care less. We're having a conversation between you and I. What does it mean to you? Please.
Okay, so to me, morality means the principles, guidelines, behaviors, actions that are used to dictate how one lives their life and what they perceive generally as good or bad, right or wrong, good or evil, anything
okay.
like that.
Right, good. Everything you said, I agree with.
Sure.
Everything you said.
Okay.
Now you, I think, are trying to say that those things come from outside yourself.
To me personally, yes. I'm a religious person. So for me, the clear answer is yes. However, I recognize that everyone
and me
has.
Too. In fact, okay. I can tell you this. Anybody at the age of 74, as I am, is far more religious, my friend.
Interesting.
Than you, at your young age. and I tell you, truthfully, there is only one religious book and only one path to God or whatever you wish to call this entity, thing, concept, beyond which you are able to touch, see, smell, and taste. That book is in you. And there can be no other book for you, and that book will be different for every single person in every single different situation. And that the idea that there is, in fact, some universal right and universal wrong, I challenge that person to wander this world for 15 years and see every different culture, every different hardship, every different reality. Mm-hmm. And you tell me, sir, what is right and wrong? And I will tell you the fallacy in your statement.
Okay, so you think it's subjective on everything or just on some things?
Everything.
Really?
Everything. You can't have half measures avail you nothing in life, people. Nothing. And if something applies to one thing and not to another, mm-hmm. then that has no value. Mathematics, for example, is an example of something that applies to every aspect of reality. It has been my training. Mm-hmm. My love, why I was my love, it came easy to me. Something wrong with my brain. I never had to study.
Yeah, well, got natural.
Go through school, graduate school, I never had to study.
Yeah.
I got straight A's. Why? I was something different. Mm-hmm. That's just me. However, I do know this, that mathematics applies to every aspect of reality. And I also tell you that the book inside you applies to every aspect of reality mm-hmm. for you, because you are a unique living entity on a planet, a blue planet, circling an unremarkable star at the edge of an unremarkable galaxy in a universe of trillions of galaxies. You can have
that.
No meaning whatsoever. You can have no possible relevance in this universe. And once you realize that, ooh, I am nothing. I mean, all this about me, because this is what most people are, my friend. They divide the world into two things, me and not me. Mm-hmm. Mine and not mine. And this is the universe. And everybody believes that this thing called me is the most important. How can you prove it? Look at people's actions. And you give me a single one that does not have a tinge of self-serving to it. Unless it's an autonomic response, like a child drowning in a river. We don't think. We jump in, pull them out, right? Yeah. I'm sorry. I take this on the stage, right?
No. No, I'm just I'm listening with intrigue. It's not I hear a lot of perspectives on a lot of things, and I don't think this is a perspective I've kind of quite heard to that degree before. So I'm mulling it over in my head and just listening intently. Yeah.
My perspective does not come from either books or other people's ideas. Mm-hmm. It comes from my own 74 years of experience outside the box of expectations, morality, and right and wrong. Else I could never have understood anything about who I am and what my relationship to the world is.
So what do you deem right or wrong then in your own worldview? Because, I mean, I don't believe
that there's... I deem the concept of right and wrong as being the prime cause of the decline of both human civilization and human individuality.
Oh, okay, that's quite a statement. What do you mean by that?
You don't see it?
No, not at all. I think the opposite.
All right, let's talk about it then.
Yeah.
What is your religion? May I ask? I don't mean to be...
I'm a Christian.
Okay, Protestant. May I be a Muslim then for a while?
If you'd like to, sure.
All right. Let me tell you what right and wrong is. It is wrong not to see the truth that Allah is Supreme God and that Muhammad is his prophet, which is why you Christians are wrong and need to be eradicated. Now, my friends, you have your... I told you my right and wrong. Is that your right and wrong? No, it is not. So yeah. What does it mean?
Okay, so but surely there are certain things. I mean, even if you're talking about...
Name one, just one.
Murder?
Murder? What does that mean? One person killing another. Is that what you're saying?
One person killing another, yes, outside.
Don't give me goddamn... I'm sorry.
I'm saying technically for it to be murder.
Don't give conditions, please.
Okay, well, a murder has to be unlawful. But yeah, so killing
another human.
Killing an innocent person.
Yes. No.
Yes.
Innocent.
Yes.
Can you describe that?
Innocent.
What does that mean?
Innocent means not guilty of a crime and someone who's not trying to harm you in this case. I mean, I think we need to be slightly nuanced. Otherwise, you know.
All right. Yeah. The people in the Enola Gay, which was the airplane that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, killing hundreds of thousands instantly.
Yes.
Those people down below were trying to harm those people.
Yeah, agreed.
And those people down below were pretty much innocent of anything toward these two guys.
Correct.
Now, tell me what right and wrong is. Is it right for them to say, yes, I'll drop the bomb? Or is it wrong for them to drop the bomb? If it's wrong, then the problem remains, my friend, that every single structure of military existence evaporates if you allow people like the bomber to, I don't think I want to push the button.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? There is no right or wrong here. There are just circumstances beyond the control of everyone, which is your entire life. Your entire life. Right or wrong, which would actually exist if you had any control over anything, but you do not.
Okay, we're going even deeper now. Okay.
You want to go seriously deep?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you don't. No.
No, let's.
No, you don't want to do that.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for this, but yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued.
Are you? Right. Let's play the following game. So, I'm going to ask you a question, and you can ask me a question.
Okay, go ahead.
My question is simply, who are you?
I am Zuby.
You are a sound? That's what I just heard. You're a sound?
I know. I'm a human.
A name?
I'm a human being.
You said you're a human.
Yes. My name is Zuby. people know me as Zuby.
And that's supposed to tell me who you are.
Oh,
and that's supposed to tell you who you are? I don't think so, my friend. Please get real with me here and now. You said you wanted to go deep. Mm-hmm. We're starting deep,
okay,
my friend.
Okay.
You must be honest with me. Who are you?
Who am I? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. If we're going like that, define the question. What would you like to know? How do I? What core things do I define myself by? What do I believe? Do I do? Like what? There's a lot of questions there.
Are you, for example, a thought?
Oh, okay.
Imagination in your own mind.
That's a part. I seem to be,
Here's the issue. The reason I'm asking is because this is the great question of all philosophers of all ages, including the great Greeks, with the grand question. What is the answer to life? Know thyself, meaning you know who you are, and you are not a name. I promise you, you are not a species. You are not a black man or a white man. You have nothing to do with those things. They're just merely garbs that you choose to wear or not.
I'm not sure I chose all of them, but yeah.
You need to look into you to find out who you are before you start saying this is right for everybody. Murder is absolutely wrong. Oh, what are these poor guys in the airplane, got to push a button. They know they're going to be murdering many people.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's wrong.
A hard place. There's no right or wrong. That is not a right or wrong situation. It is simply the situation. What's right or wrong is in the hearts
I understand.
The pilot and co-pilot. Yeah.
I get what you mean. Okay, but in a less extreme exceptional example, would you Would you still hold on to that perspective? I think dropping a bomb on Hiroshima.
Yes.
Is okay. Okay.
I would hold on to it if you took it all the way down to the colony of ants, because if it's true, it's true for everything. There is no truth that is partial. Oh, which is absolutely true, but only between 9 and 10 on Thursdays. No. Mm-hmm. If it's true, it's true. I do not care what these circumstances are. There is no right, nor is there wrong. And if there is a wrong, my friend, that wrong would be the concept that there is right and wrong.
Would that not be an extremely dangerous philosophy in a lot of people's hands in reality, if that was how they thought?
Well, what if I told you that 200 million Buddhists think exactly that? That is their utter, absolute belief.
Is it? I don't know a lot about Buddhism, to be honest.
Well, you might want to look into it if you are a religious man, because that is a religion.
I'm aware it is. As far as I know, Buddhists, you know, are generally very decent people. So I somewhat assume
I think they're the most decent on the planet. Okay. And the most decent on the planet. Yet they absolutely deny the existence of right and wrong.
Okay, that's interesting.
The same thing I do, which is the cause of all suffering, is the belief that there is right and wrong.
Okay, so why is that?
Buddhists, the most general of all people, pardon?
Why is that the cause? Why would that be the greatest cause of suffering? Can you explain that? Because I don't follow that thread.
Because if there's right and wrong, you can believe that you're right by acting in a certain way.
Yes.
And if you're right, those who do not act like you are wrong, and you will get angry. And if you have power, you will either enslave, kill, or somehow force them to your way of living. Please see this. This is the fundamental purpose of politics, for heaven's sake.
Sure.
The right and wrong is what's killing us people. There is no such thing.
But if killing people isn't even wrong, then why would that even be a bad thing? Why would suffering even be a bad thing? Why would killing people be a bad thing based on that very same logic?
Killing is one thing. We're talking about suffering.
Is it not suffering when
the world is in chaos because of the conflict between one group and another?
Yeah, I don't like suffering.
I just gave you one between the Muslims and the Christians.
Yeah,
you're right, and they say they're right.
Yes,
say the truth here. Madness.
But if nobody
it's
believes
madness.
In if nobody believes in right or wrong and choose to harm, maim, kill each other based on the fact that none of that stuff is even considered wrong to them.
Because it has nothing to do with rules. It has to do with your heart, people. You have lost your heart. I'm sorry for yelling, but that is the truth. You've lost your heart.
I've lost my heart.
Here.
Okay.
No, you obviously have. Because there's no right or wrong in here. There's no right or wrong. There's simply action or not action. You have disconnected your heart from your head, my friend. Okay. And you believe there is such a thing that the head says, well, I don't care what the heart thinks. Stop the head.
No, my heart and my head are pretty on the same page in this regard.
Everybody's are if you will just listen to the heart and stop overriding it. Because your heart tells you what's right and what's wrong. And it's never the same for any situation that looks the same. The heart knows it is a sensitive instrument. Stop this mental crap. Excuse me. This mental nonsense, people. Your heart is your love.
Okay.
It is what connects you to the world, to other people. And the head is the thing that creates religion, it creates right, it creates wrong.
So should we not have laws?
In doing so, you have destroyed your heart. I'm sorry.
So should we have laws? So should we not have laws? How do we form a cohesive society? Like, how do we not have laws?
Well, libertarians say you don't need laws.
Well, libertarians still believe in certain the most basic of laws, which are based on the most basic moralities. But if those basic
laws simply don't lie.
Well, non-aggression
don't steal,
principle.
Keep your word, and do what you want.
Yes,
don't harm another.
Yeah.
So where does the law come into that? There's no laws in libertarianism, sir.
Those are laws of libertarianism. Every libertarian would
agree. You tell me one. Show me a law, please. In the libertarian philosophy, what law could possibly exist?
Don't murder people. Don't rape people. Don't steal people's property.
No, that's not. No, that is not the libertarian philosophy.
Okay.
No, sir.
That was not.
You are lying about the third largest party in America that does not believe in a single law. Other than, don't lie, don't steal,
okay,
keep your word,
okay,
and don't harm.
Didn't I just say that?
Right. Pardon?
Didn't I just say that? I said don't rape, don't kill, and don't steal people's stuff.
But that's a law. There are no laws. There's no police going to come and get you. This is a community thing, people. There's nobody. I'm sorry.
No. I don't need laws.
You can't say, oh, raping. No, it's a community thing. It's solved between the neighbor, between the person who feels offended and the other. And if he can't be, get the next neighbor involved. Nobody needs a law anymore. You all need heart. That's what the Libertarian Party is. The heart, people, is freedom.
But in the country of
liberation,
in a country of 330 million people, though, I mean, I think I can understand, I can empathize with what you're saying. But in terms of reality and being pragmatic, I mean, how is it any country of hundreds of millions of people going to work on that sort of basis? I can see a small commune or something like that working, or, you know, an extended family working on that basis. You don't need laws within your own family or perhaps in a very small community. But as the number of humans rises, the reality is that there needs to be some kind of law or system. Or if that's not the case, I've never seen any place where that works.
Then you haven't studied anything about American history. Because in the west of the Mississippi River, there were no laws other than what the towns created. There was no federal government, even though it was an American territory. Mm-hmm. And people go, well, yeah, but that was the most violent period of American history. No, not true. Not true. It was the least violent. Yeah, it's portrayed in movies and in documentaries as an extraordinarily violent period. Why? Because they focus on and sensationalize two or three strange and rare events. Mm-hmm. But put yourself in the place of the average cowboy. You pull into town. You'd love to get to the saloon to get a drink and buy a woman. And you bump into somebody coming out of the saloon. Now, you know that every single man in the world is armed and well-trained with a pistol. Mm-hmm. Half of the women are armed. Do you go, you bumped into me? No. Both people take their hats off and apologize. Why? The guy coming out of the bar, he knows whoever's coming in is armed, right? Mm-hmm. And whoever's coming in is probably less drunk than him. So he's at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. The guy coming into the bar, he doesn't know. I mean, I know nothing about this guy. He may be the best gunfighter. No, they both tip their hats. They both apologize. In all the Wild West photos of a woman as president, the men's hats are off. Mm-hmm. Politeness. Because the woman whose hats you're not taking off might be the girlfriend of the fastest draw in the West. No, you take your hat off, you offend no one. Mm-hmm. It worked without law, people.
What was the population in that area, though?
20 million.
20 million in that region?
West of the Mississippi, yeah, in 1875,
okay. 20 million. Okay, interesting. Interesting. Are there any examples of this in the modern day where this kind of works? The closest I can think is...
No, because we've all been brainwashed by capitalism and communism and socialism and other isms, including religiousism. And so we can't think for ourselves. But no, listen, there were... You could go 500 miles in all directions. In parts of America, like if you started in the center of Colorado, before you found any area that had a law. Mm. And when you did have the law, they were not serious laws. They were like, please, don't spit on the floor of the saloon, right? And if you did, the law was not metered, or the punishment was not metered out by the sheriff. No, the patrons in the bar beat the man half to death. That was the warning. This is the law. That's what law should be. Listen, please don't spit on our floor. That's all we're asking.
Okay. Right?
And so you spit on the floor. All right, enough is enough. Throw the guy out. You may not beat him half to death, but he's going to know next time he comes in, he better not spit on the floor.
Yeah.
That's what law should be, my friend. Not some written code somewhere that applies universally. It's not possible. No, the actual conditions. Maybe the guy came in, stumbled over a chair, I don't know, or he had tuberculosis, I don't know, was coughing and spitting, and instead of throwing him out, people going, help this man. I don't know. You don't know until it happens. There are no rights and wrongs. I'm saying it again, and I'm afraid I'm asleep.
Yeah, I know.
I'm way over time.
I know, man. Thank you. It's been interesting. It's been very fascinating speaking to you, John. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And
you're very welcome.
Awesome, man.
Thank you, sir.
Real quick, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you?
Official McAfee on Twitter. That's my only place. That's my only home.
Awesome. Official McAfee on Twitter. Go follow him.
Thank you.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.